The Royal Gelatin Hour, directed by Rudy Valley. Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and Company. A prominent Broadway producer, visiting our rehearsal some weeks ago, was much impressed by the necessity of timing every act and number with stopwatches. You ought to give out timetables instead of programs, he said. There's an idea, and here's tonight's timetable.
At 4 minutes and 20 seconds after the hour begins,
Charlie McCarthy, the genial and popular dummy with his partner, Edgar Bergen, ventriloquist.
At 19 minutes and 55 seconds after the hour,
Roland Young, international picture and stage personality with Francis Fuller, featured in Stage Door on Broadway. Mr. Young and Miss Fuller will be heard in The Noble Lord, an amusing one-act comedy by Percival Wilder.
At 29 minutes and 35 seconds after the hour,
The Charioteers, who in our opinion share top honors among radio quartets with the Mills Brothers.
At 39 minutes and 5 seconds after the hour,
Sidney Franklin, American bullfighter. In the opinion of experts, one of the greatest living masters of the art of daring death in the afternoon.
At 48 minutes and 55 seconds after the hour,
Walter C. Kelly, the Virginia judge. Vaudeville veteran, one of America's great entertainers produced by the Variety Theater in these United States. And at various assorted minutes throughout, words and music by the Connecticut Yankees, the Swing Kids, and your humble, obedient servant who is minus an impacted wisdom tooth and who hopes it may never happen to you.
Creature,
love and learn.
I'll be your teacher, learn and love. Someone who cares for you.
One copper diamond.
Lesson one.
Kids are exciting.
Lesson two.
Arms are inviting.
Lesson three. Do what they tell you to.
If I getcha, you can betcha. I won't let you get out.
Let me set you right, oh, love and learn. Who to be kissed by?
Love and learn. Who to be missed by?
Love and learn that I'm in love with you.
Every source of information at our command indicates that you are growing very fond of Edgar Bergen and his little wooden-headed friend, Charlie McCarthy. For the benefit of newcomers, however, let me explain that Edgar Bergen is a ventriloquist, and Charlie is the dummy who sits on Edgar's knee and seems to talk. Both voices you hear, take it from me, are owned and operated by one man, Edgar Bergen.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Charlie McCarthy talking. I'm going to talk tonight on fourth dimension. I may even get into fifth dimension. up to my neck into it.
All right. Now, just a moment, young man.
Uh-huh.
Before you go ahead with this talk, I want you to know...
Yes?
...that you had a very interesting letter from Washington, D.C.
Is that so?
Yes, a fan letter.
Oh, boo-boo-boo.
Yes.
What do they want to know?
Well, they'd like to know something about your love life.
Uh-huh.
Well...
Well, there isn't much to say.
Oh, there isn't?
No, not really.
Oh, I see. Then you haven't had a love life.
Well, I wouldn't say that either, no. I get around a little.
Oh, I see.
But I don't feel that it should be public.
Oh, I see.
Was she interested?
Yes, this was a very charming girl.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Well, now that's different.
Yes.
Maybe I should read my fan letters a little closer.
I think you ought to.
Yes. What did she say?
Well, she wants to know all about you. Yes.
Well, is it, it's not prickle-tattle.
Oh, no.
It's got to be the real thing, you know.
Oh, yes.
It's got to be heavy love.
Yes.
Steady going like that.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
But aren't you a little bit young to have a sweetheart?
Well, of course I'm not getting any younger.
Oh, aren't you?
No. I was going steady when I was 7 years old.
Is that right?
Yes, indeed.
Well.
She was only 8, though.
I see.
She wasn't very sophisticated.
I don't suppose so.
I don't think it was real love.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. Either. No.
What about school?
Oh, I had lots of sweethearts.
Yes.
In zoology class, I met Catherine and Gertrude and Eleanor.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. I went steady with all of them, too.
Oh, fine. You met them all in zoology class.
Mm-hmm. I was pretty good in zoology.
I should say. Yes.
Catherine sat in front of me and Eleanor sat in back of me. Oh, what fun, what fun.
Yes.
What laughs.
Yes. But at the end of the year, did you know anything about zoology?
Well, not as much as I knew about Catherine and Gertrude.
No.
Well, all I can remember is... Once I had to dissect a frog.
Dissect a frog?
Yes.
Did you find out what made it croak?
I think it was the chloroform I gave it.
Yes.
I was supposed to study the nervous system.
Yes.
But I didn't make anything out of it, though. Didn't mean a thing to me.
I did. Didn't help you?
No. I don't think it helped the frog any either.
No.
I could put it back together again.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Well, now tell me about this Catherine.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, I gave her my pin.
Oh, your pin.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah?
What fraternity?
Boy Scout pin.
Oh, Boy Scout. Well, then it was serious.
Oh, it was, sure.
Yes. You were as good as married.
No, I was better than married.
Oh, you were?
Yes. Well, I couldn't have been worse than married.
No, no.
Ah, but that's all over now.
Well, what was the matter? What brought this love boat on the rocks?
Well, I guess I was too good to her.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I took her to the park, you see, the zoo, and bought her candy and gum and Cracker Jack.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Two boxes. Yes. None of this divvy up stuff. Oh, I see.
And she got the best prize.
The best prize?
Yes, darn it.
I see.
So then going home one night, I said, let's hold hands, see?
Hold hands.
Mm-hmm. What do you think she said?
What did she say?
She said, no.
No?
Boy, did I burn up.
I imagine.
After all the money I'd spent, too.
Yes. Well, don't you think it was a little out of order, insisting on holding hands?
Well, maybe it was. But I'm a wild sort of fella, you know.
Oh, yes.
Yoo-hoo!
All right.
It's the gypsy in me.
Yes.
Abba-ba-boo.
All right.
But what about you, Mr. Bergen? You must have had some romances, too.
Well, of course, I have also loved and lost.
Uh-huh.
2 years ago, I spent a good deal of time in China and Japan.
Oh, did you?
Yes. Very interesting color. Very interesting country. And so colorful.
Yes. And it's so oriental, too.
Yes. I shall never forget a sight there, seeing these thousands of Chinese coolies, you know,
uh-huh.
working in the fields from sun up until sundown.
Yes.
Slaving away.
Yes.
So that they could give us our rice and our tea.
Yes.
It didn't seem fair.
No, it doesn't, does it?
No.
When you think that all we give them in return is our dirty laundry.
Yes.
No. But what about your romance, Professor?
Oh, yes, Well, when I was in Pango Pango...
You mean Tingo Pongo?
No, no, Pango Pango.
Oh, Pango Pango, Pango Pango. Oh, Pango Pango, Pango Pango, Pango Pango Pango. Oh, join hands and circle to the left.
All right.
Oh, Zazu Zazu.
All right. Oh.
I'm swinging out.
Yes, all right.
Yoo-hoo!
That will do, yes. Well, now, what was I going to say?
I don't know.
Yes.
When you were in China, did you see the dawn come up like thunder out of China across the bay?
Well, you read your poetry.
Oh, yes, I'm a little learned.
I can see that. Do you like to read poetry?
Well, it's better than being sent to the principal's office for not reading it.
I imagine so. Yes. Well, who's your favorite poet?
Oh, Longfellow, I guess.
Yes.
Who do you like?
Well, I always enjoyed Burns.
Burns?
Yes.
What did he write?
Well, he wrote to a field mouse.
He did what?
I say he wrote to a field mouse.
Did he?
Yes.
Did the mouse answer?
All right.
Well, I didn't know.
It's the name of a poem.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yes.
Never heard of it.
I see. Well, I think it was one of the best things that he wrote.
Is that so?
Yes.
Maybe it was his masterpiece.
All right.
Didn't care for that.
No. Now, I want to tell you this, young man.
Yes.
There's no use trying to explain this poem to you.
No.
No, you won't appreciate it unless you've been out of the city. Unless you've lived close to nature.
Well, what do you mean, out of the city? Don't I go up to my grandmother's house every summer?
Oh, you do?
Up in Michigan?
Oh, that's right.
On the good old farm?
Yes. Yes.
I saw lots of mouses.
Whoa.
Huh?
What was that?
I said, I've saw lots of mouses, I said.
You have?
Yes.
Where's your grammar?
She's still up in Michigan.
No. No. What I mean is...
Well, I don't understand.
What I wanted to say was this.
Well, say it.
Did
you forget your lines?
All right.
Would you like Rudy to play a chorus or two?
No, that's all right.
You're supposed to say... I don't know, just...
Oh, yes, thank you.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Oh, that's all right.
Yes. A little embarrassing.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Mm.
It's embarrassing for me, too.
Yes.
After all, I'm supposed to be the dummy.
Yes, I...
gets weary carrying this year load. I'm happy and whistling when I'm to and fro aboard my little mule wagon, traveling the dusty road. Oh, little Jenny, go slow. I got plenty of time. The sun is a smiling, my heart is a singing. I sing and I laugh, 'cause nobody's half as glad
As I'm a-riding my wagon over the countryside, we never get nowhere, only to take a ride. Along about sundown, I'm at my journey's end, aboard my little new wagon, that is my only friend. Francis Fuller in The Noble Lord, a comedy by Percival Wilde. Mr. Young divides his time between Hollywood, Broadway, and the English movie studios, with an occasional visit to various microphones. His most recent American releases, Give Me Your Heart, The Unguarded Hour, and Ruggles of Red Gap. Miss Fuller has had leading roles in a long series of Broadway successes, notably Her Master's Voice with Mr. Young, and Stage Door with Margaret Sullivan, her current assignment. Roland Young with Francis Fuller in The Noble Lord.
Our scene is a woodland glade. Offstage to the right is a small lake or pond, very wet. Into the scene walks, or rather staggers, a gentleman wearing a monocle and carrying a young lady. He drops both girl and glass, and as we see that man and girl are, like the lake, all wet. He bends over her warily. Looks as if he were trying to remember how Boy Scouts go about reviving people. She speaks.
Mother, kiss me. Mother, kiss me.
Emily, I beg your pardon.
Hold me close, Mother dear.
But I say, you know, I'm not your mother.
Kiss me. Kiss me. Kiss me.
Oh, well, if you put it like that.
Oh.
There you are.
Where am am I?
You know, I thought you'd say that. We're about half a mile away from the Grand Springs Hotel, Grand Springs, Maine, United States of America.
Oh, thank you so much.
Huh? Oh, I meant it.
Oh, my clothes are wet.
Yes, mm-hmm.
How funny, and you, you're wet, too.
Oh, yes, yes, you're wet, I'm wet, we're both wet. Mm-hmm.
What a coincidence. How curious. How did it happen? Oh, if I could only think. Tell me. You must know.
Well, I was floating through the woods, and I heard a splash.
A splash? Oh, don't say any more. I remember.
Mm-hmm.
That horrible lake. Horrible. It was so warm at the hotel, I'd gone off to the woods. I was sitting at the edge of the lake, on a rock.
All right.
Reading. I must have been sleepy. I fell in.
Yes, and then you screamed.
Yes, I was drowning. I called for help.
Yeah, I heard you. Oh.
I sank, oh, miles and miles. It felt as if hands were trying to pull me down to the bottom.
Yeah.
I screamed again, and then I felt a strong arm around my waist. I was dizzy. There was a roaring in my ears. I knew no more.
Too bad.
And you were the man who jumped in. You saved my life. Oh, how can I ever thank you, my hero?
Oh, really, you're not. It's quite all right.
Oh, but it's not all right. I can never repay you. Never. Not if I live to be 1,000 years old. Kiss me, my hero.
That's the second time I've kissed you, you know.
The second time?
As I kissed you before.
Oh, you didn't.
Oh, yes, I did.
While I was unconscious?
Precisely.
Oh, how could you do such a thing? How could you?
Well, it was by request.
I asked you?
Yes, you said, Mother, kiss me.
Oh, I said that?
Those were your first words.
But you didn't have to kiss me.
Well, I tried to explain that I was not your mother, but you seemed to know better. You insisted. I couldn't help it.
What do you mean, you couldn't help it?
Oh, yeah, that pretty girl, you know. That's a pretty girl.
No.
Oh, sure. Oh, it's anyway.
You honestly think so?
There was no one around. It was the kind of an opportunity that doesn't prevent itself every day. Life is so monotonous, and you didn't seem to object.
Well, I couldn't very well, not while I was unconscious.
No, that's all right. See, I'm a man with a man's taste, and you begged so hard, and it was so inviting that, well, I kiss you.
On the lips?
Oh, yes, all right, on the lips, yes.
How often?
Huh?
How often did you kiss me?
Well, only once, but it took quite a time.
But only once.
Well, it's hardly worth mentioning, really.
Well, I forgive
you. Oh, thank you.
Two kisses is not a great deal for saving my life.
No?
I owe you much more than that.
Really?
Really? Oh, no. I think maybe I'm going to faint again.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. Please, don't do that, no.
Well, maybe not. Now you must tell me all about yourself.
Oh, I don't like to talk about myself.
Oh, you're still a young man, aren't you?
31, last November.
I'm just 20. Only 11 years between us.
Just the right ages, aren't we?
Do you think so? Lord Brookfield?
Huh?
Lord Brookfield.
Oh, how on earth did you know it?
Oh, I'm not so stupid as all that.
Oh, I see.
You're English. I could see that right away.
Oh, but how clever of you.
Oh, Lord Brookfield.
How curious I should meet you this way, informally, so to speak.
Odd, wasn't it?
Yes, very. Tell me, can you swim?
Huh?
Can you swim?
Lord Brookfield, of course I can.
That's very curious. Neither can I.
Oh, but you swam splendidly, clothes and all the way from the other side of the lake.
Did I?
Of course you did. One plunge and a few magnificent overhead strokes.
Plunge?
Why, certainly. Mm-hmm.
I could have sworn I waded.
Oh. You're really too modest, Lord Brookfield.
But see, of course, I may have swum, but the water only just comes as far as the waist.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lord Brookfield, don't deny that you saved my life.
That's what I'm trying to do.
I beg your pardon.
I jumped in without thinking. It was the natural thing to do. I heard your scream for help. But the moment the water came up to my waist, I knew that if I went any further, it went any further, I should have to call for help, too.
Well?
I was spared that humiliation. The pond isn't over 3 feet deep in any place. And I waded the whole 20 feet from one end to the other, and I can't swim.
But But I was drowning, drowning.
Yes, are you in the habit of drowning often?
Oh, Lord Brooks.
I nearly forgot to mention.
What?
But I saw you jump in.
Oh.
It was pleasant while it lasted, wasn't it? And romantic. Well, romantic doesn't begin to describe it. Mother, kiss me.
Oh, stop. Stop.
Unconscious, helpless, and you didn't remember. Very clever. And the hands trying to pull you down to the bottom. That was a touch of genius. Well, I was willing to have a little fun, you know.
Oh, you played with me. Played with me. Oh, you're disgusting. What a thing for a man to do. I thought...
Yeah?
Nothing. I thought Lord Brookfield was a gentleman.
Oh, but I'm not.
Not a gentleman?
No, not Lord Brookfield.
Not Lord Brookfield?
No.
Then who on earth are you?
I am a friend of his. Close friend, you know, very close. I see a lot of him. We're very sick.
Who are you?
I'm his valet.
Oh! And you kissed me? A valet? And you dared kiss me?
At your request.
But a valet, a valet.
I'm a good valet, you know, one of the best there is.
A valet?
Listen to me.
I won't.
I'll help you.
I don't want your help.
Then you're very silly.
How dare you?
I'll make a bargain with you. Look, down the path there at the foot of the hill.
Well?
That Brookfield.
Well?
That path leads here. He's following the path.
Well?
You and I might be very good friends.
Oh.
The valet isn't paid very much.
No.
If anything comes of it.
Comes of what?
Oh, you understand me. Here, your clothes are still wet, aren't they?
Yes.
Enough said. Quick.
You won't tell. I'll remember you. Goodbye.
Give me a light, Peter.
Yes, my lord.
Thanks, Peter. You're a brave man, aren't you?
Well, I am handy with me fists, my lord.
No, that's not quite what I mean, Peter. Peter, you have the making of a hero in you.
What?
Something tells me you're going to have your chance.
My lord!
Yes, Peter?
Someone's yelling for help, my lord.
Yes, Peter.
Well, shall I go, my lord?
Yes, Peter. Gallop.
I'm coming! I'm coming!
Oh, Peter.
Yes, my lord.
Duck her head under a few times before you pull her out, will you, Peter?
WEAF, New York.
Well, it served her right. That's the way to treat such women, I always say. Thank you, Roland and Francis. Act two now with Walter C. Kelly, the Virginia judge, Sidney Franklin, the American bullfighter, and the charioteers. Harlem, sweet singers. It is an old custom of ours to bring back to our microphone people who, starting here, have gone on to success in the network. The Charioteers made their commercial debut on this stage about a year ago, and they've been pretty busy ever since. At the time they started, most Negro quartets were imitating the Mills Brothers. The Charioteers wisely developed a style of their own. By the way, what's the name of that song?
Oh, the name of this song is Ride Red, Ride, Ride Red.
Boom.
My goodness gracious, you thrill me bodacious, and so I've been
right. London Bridge is
is falling down. Why don't you help me go to town?
A spiritual now, a spiritual. Little David, play on your harp. Notice the falsetto effect by the leader of the charioteers, William Williams. Little David, play on your harp.
Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah.
Little David was a shepherd boy. He killed a lion and shout the joy.
Little David, play
on your harp, hallelujah, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah.
Little David, play
on your harp, hallelujah, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah.
I done told you once. I done told you twice. That's
Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp, hallelujah, hallelujah. Little David, play on your harp.
Should have told you what your looks would mean on a movie screen. You would steal the scene, baby. Never should have told you. Since I put you wise, all you do is roll your eyes at everyone in the crowd. My, but you're acting proud. Now that you know I care, you've got your nose up in the air. Never should have told you that you're heavenly, like a dream to me. Now you're mean to me, baby. Never should have told you. To introduce Sidney Franklin, I think, is to borrow from Death in the Afternoon, the words of Ernest Hemingway, famous novelist and bullfight authority. Hemingway writes, "Franklin is brave with a cold, serene, and intelligent valor. He is one of the most skillful, graceful, and slow manipulators of the Cape fighting today. He kills easily and well. He had great and legitimate artistic triumphs in Sevilla, Madrid, and San Sebastian, filling the Madrid ring so that there was not a ticket to be had three times running. He has truly lived three lives, one Mexican, one Spanish, one American, in a way that is unbelievable." End of quotes. May we present the kid from Spain and Brooklyn, Sidney Franklin, Matador. Buenas noches, Senor Franklin. ¿Qué tal le parece los toros?
Ah, muy malo, Senor Valley. Muy malo. You speak Spanish, amigo?
I majored in it at college, and if radio hadn't grabbed me, I'd probably be in Buenos Aires today. But tell me, Sidney, how did you come to make that terrific jump from Brooklyn to the bull ring in Madrid?
Oh, it's a long story, Rudy. But it boils down to about this. I really was kidded into becoming a bullfighter.
Kidded? Well, let's have the story.
Well, I'll give you the high spots, Rudy. I got out of Columbia University when I was 17 years old and made a pretty good living as a commercial artist in New York for about a year. Then I went to Mexico City on a vacation. At least I thought it was going to be a vacation. But I found out that Mexico City needed a commercial artist worse than New York did, so I stayed there.
You attended many bullfights, I suppose?
No, I didn't think I'd like it, Rudy. I drew plenty of posters for the fights, but I stayed outside the arena. Finally, having made considerable coin, I decided to come home. I had seen everything else, so at last, just before I was to leave, I went to a bullfight. The matador's job looked easy to me, and I said so.
Is it easy?
My friend, I've spent 12 years and lost a lot of good Brooklyn blood finding out how difficult it is. Anyhow, I told my Mexican friends it was easy, that anybody could do it, and finally that I could do it. The story got around town, and I became an object of ridicule. It was a great joke, Rudy, you know, the gringo who thought he could become a matador. Well, it got so bad I had to do something about it, and I did. And I've been a bullfighter ever since.
And now, as I understand it, you are a champion.
No, Rudy, there's no such thing as a champion bullfighter. The bullfight is not a sport as Americans think of sport. It's a theatrical performance, a classic tragedy in which death for the bull is certain, death for the man is always possible. It's not a competition, either between man and man or man and the bull. It's an exhibition of courage, grace, and showmanship presented under certain fixed ritualistic conditions. The bullfight fan, or aficionado, does not go to the ring to see bulls killed or horses gored or men ripped by horns. He goes to see an exhibition of skill and bravery in the imminent presence of death.
I have seen movies of bullfighting, Sidney, and what I saw didn't look terribly impressive. It looked to me as if the bulls were as well trained as the men. Are they trained?
Of course not, Rudy. They're bred for bravery and tested for bravery, but they're not trained. In fact, it is an absolute condition of the fight that the bull has never before been in the presence of or in contact with any implement used in the arena. That's what the bullfighter is up against, and it's nearly a half a ton, or even more than that, of an animal that loves to fight. The bull does his best to kill you, and you do your best to kill the bull, but gracefully.
You, Sidney, not me. What is all the cape waving for?
Well, that's where the grace and courage come in, Rudy. It is your object so to use the cape that the bull passes you in successive rushes with his horns close to your body, as close as possible without actually touching. You must not pull away or flinch. You must exhibit complete mastery over the bull. When you are completely master, then, to an outsider, what you're doing looks easy.
Is there any reason for the cape being red? Is that to make the bull madder?
Not at all, Rudy. It is a scientific fact that all cattle are colorblind. The only reason red is used is to make it a prettier spectacle.
By the way, how much are bullfighters paid?
Well, Rudy, headliners in Mexico and Spain get $6,000 or $7,000 per fight. And they may fight more than 50 times a season. I myself have been paid as high as $18,000 for 40 minutes of actual work in the ring. Rodolfo Gaona, the greatest of the Mexican toreros, and my teacher, once made more than $100,000 in one afternoon.
That's better than Vines and Perry.
Vines and Perry don't have to face the possibility of receiving a long, sharp horn through the ribs, Trudy. Bullfighting isn't like tennis.
No, I can see that from here. Have you ever been hurt yourself?
Many, many times, Rudy. Particularly when I was a novillero, or apprentice, in Mexico. But only once, seriously. That happened in Madrid. I had killed my bull, or I thought I had. I turned to face the stands, and the bull made a dying lunge. His horn entered my back at the base of the spine and pierced through the intestines.
You have fought since?
Of course, Rudy. I fought later that same season.
Tell me, do you regard bullfighting as a cruel sport?
The best answer to that, Rudy, is really no answer at all. It's not cruel if you like it. As I said before, it's not a cruel sport at all, and it's not a sport at all. It's a drama. Fewer men are killed playing their parts than are killed playing football in America. As far as the bulls are concerned, they die a more merciful death than does a steer who is felled by a hammer blow after traveling 1,000 tortured miles in a cattle car. It's the abuse of horses, of course, that Anglo-Saxons can't stand. But that's been partly remedied recently by giving the horses protected armor. However, it all comes down to this. The seasoned spectator does not attend bullfights because he loves cruelty. To him, it isn't cruel any more than the Russian ballet is cruel.
Personally, I'll take tennis. You expect to fight again soon, Sidney?
Yes, Rudy. At present, I'm interested in a syndicate which expects to promote a season in Havana. Come down sometime, and I'll dedicate a bull to you.
Honestly, Sidney, I don't think I'd like it.
Well, that's what I thought 12 years ago, Rudy. Of course, you're a little old to begin, but a singing matador might be quite a novelty.
Yes, I can see myself singing Deep Night to an angry bull. No thanks, Sidney. However, muchas gracias por favorecernos con su visita esta noche. Mucha suerte con los dos.
Los mismos le deseo, Rudy. Adiós y que nos veamos pronto en alguna plaza de toros.
No, eso se lo dejo para usted. Adiós.
Adiós.
Battlefield's a rocking chair. Look out, for all is fair in love and war. Just like a bombshell from the air, a kiss can blow you up. Beware of love and war. Two arms can squeeze you senseless. You're defenseless in the dark. Two eyes, two brown or blue eyes, if they do invite you, they'll dynamite you
And with your back against the wall, she marches you to City Hall and leads you through the door. And then the deed is done, her victory is won, for love is just like war. Walter C. Kelly, the Virginia judge. Of late years, after a lifetime in vaudeville, Mr. Kelly has turned to the legitimate stage where he had a lead role in the prize play Both Your Houses, which I saw and enjoyed tremendously, and the screen where you saw him most recently in Laughing Irish Eyes. In private life, he is the eldest of three famous Kelly brothers, the other two being George Kelly, the famous playwright, and John Kelly, Olympic oarsman and Philadelphia political leader. Tonight, the elder Kelly brings us one of his famous Virginia judge characterizations in which he plays all the parts. The court, ladies and gentlemen, is in session. Enter his honor, the Virginia judge.
The court will be in order. First case on the docket, Travis Southall. Bring him out, Dan. Travis, is this the first time you've been up before me?
I don't know exactly, Judge. What time you generally get up?
Take him back, Dan. 24 hours. He's still drunk. Albert Marsden and John Scott. Bring those two along. You two are charged by Officer Shelby with quarreling at the Acme Restaurant on 23rd Street. Tell us about it, Scott.
Well, Your Honor, I don't want to make any squawk. I just want to put your head to this goof here. The wife and I are doing a dancing turn, see? I don't know whether you ever heard of it or not. The Marvelous McGiffs, Monarchs of Refinement. Well, Your Honor, we want to break a jump between Philadelphia and El Paso. We got a little E-flat agent in New York that books us into this slab. It's one of those hunkies where you have to live upstairs when you play there. So when we get in, the wife goes upstairs to wash the dog and check up the laundry, and I go out to rehearse with this mug. Now, I says to him very politely, I says, Bozo, I'm doing a lot of nifty chatter. It'll be over your bean, but the mob will get it, see? The finish of the act, Your Honor, we do a double shuffle and a breakaway that's good for 4 bows in any dump we ever played in.
I don't want to know anything about your act. I want to know what you're doing here.
Okay, Judgy.
And don't be calling me Judgy.
Well, Your Honor, we opened up yesterday kind of slow. They're kind of a handcuffed mob out front, see? Last night, about 10 o'clock, we're doing our 12th show, and we're all in, see? So I says to the hag, or the wife, pardon me, Judge. I says, honey, we'll cut on the chatter and go right into the big dance number. Your Honor, we come down to our big double 40 exit, and I look down at the piano, and there's his knob to sleep, dead to the world. Leaves us cold on the stage, and we go off without a ripple. Well, the wife is burning up, see? But she's a very fine girl, so she says to me very quietly, she says, Cutie, if you don't slam that guy in the mush, you and I are through. Well, you'd washed up, I duck into the restaurant to get a bowl of coffee and buy a sandwich for the frau, and I get a peek at his knobs there, sitting up on a stool, inhaling some food, and I said to him very quietly, I says, Mug, I want a word with you. He tries to give me a rain check. So I fold up the biscuit hooks and tag him on the kisser. Now, I was taking an encore when one of the flatfoots come in and grabbed us. That's all the sewage from it.
What about it, Marsden?
Will your worship, I'm the pianist at the Bijou Dream Theatre here. And this chap and his lady came yesterday and opened up very poorly. I fancy that they're married, but the act received very scant applause. And he blamed it on me. And last evening, I stopped him to the restaurant to have a pot of tea and a crumpet. And while I was there, this chap entered and attacked me violently. I commanded him to desist, but he persisted in the assault until the officer came in. That's all the stewards are working.
You go ahead home, Martin. You look as if you've got all the worst of it. $5 in cost, Scott. That'll be $6.25.
Well, Your Honor, if you find $6.25 on me, I'll split it with you. If I don't find it, you'll split rock for the next 10 days. Take him back, Dan. Bring out that bunch been mixed up in that shooting. What's your name?
Well, my name's Pansy Marshall, Judge. I've never been brought to you at all. Damn, you've got started. I've been a fuss up.
Why? What's your name?
My name's Chink Wallace, Judge.
What's yours?
Beauregard Z Longstreet.
What's the Z about?
Well, I just put that in so to separate those two, Judge. That's all.
You three are charged with shooting firearms and disorderly conduct on the highway. Tell us about it, Pansy.
Well, Judge, I'm going to speak the Lord's gospel truth. About 2 weeks ago, this man Beauregard come aboard at my house, and he lay around my house 2 weeks and don't pay me no board, and pretend he's sick. And then I asked him what's wrong with him, and he said he don't know, that he can eat, sleep, and drink all right, but he got no desire to work. I said, boy, you ain't sick, you just gifted. But he keep on putting me off, and I just chuck him out of my house, and I kept everything he got.
Did you keep his trunk?
No, Judge, if that man had a trunk, he'd live in it himself.
What did you keep on him?
Well, he didn't have much, except a calendar and some fish hooks, that's all he had.
Quite a wardrobe. How did the shooting start?
Well, last evening, I was sitting on my front doorstep with two of my other gentlemen boarders, Mr. Leroy and Mr. Galloway. They both work over at the garbage plant. A Beauregard come on by with Chink, and he looked at my other two boarders, and he said right out loud, he said, yonder two men slowly starving to death. I said, yes, and I see some other man going to run himself to death presently. But he stand right in front of my house, Judge, and make face at me and talk scandal about me. And I always carry a little pistol with me so I can collect my board money. And when he won't go away, I just shut off the pistol, scare him. I don't want to hit nobody.
Did you hear the shooting, King?
Yes, sir, Judge. I hear it go off twice, just like that. I ran when he was sitting well over Lafayette Avenue, about 2 blocks away.
Where were you, Beauregard? I was slightly ahead of King. How much does this fellow owe you, Pansy?
Well, Judge, he owed me 2 weeks' board and room. That's $2.50 a week. That's $5.
How much money have you got, Bury?
Well, Judge, I ain't got but about $1.80, but I've got some very good prospects.
You give her the $1.80 and keep the prospects. If I hear tell of you messing around her boarding house anymore, you'll both go in the chain gang.
Mr. Brown?
What is it, Wheezy?
Mr. Uzzle and Mr. Tucker say if y'all better come over to Jackson Club. They got their important business. I want to talk with y'all right away.
I reckon I'll have to go over there.
And, Judge, Mr. Tucker said, don't forget, bring over 2 new decks of cars. That would...
Get out of that window. Dan, I reckon you'd better lock up those other 3 prisoners. I'll hear their cases tomorrow.
Court
adjourned.
Next week, Brian Ahern and Percy Granger heading another fine catch. My pianist and I are catching a plane tonight for Miami, where beginning tomorrow night we begin a 5-day engagement at the Deauville Club. May we wish ourselves a happy landing in Miami tomorrow morning. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Tonight's music included Love and Learn from That Girl from Paris. This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.